ananta koti vaishnava indiki namacharya shlahari dastakuriki prem sega hosri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri dvaita gradhar shivasari gaur bhakta vrindiki shishi radha krishna go gopa gopina shamakunda radha kunda giri govardhana ki shri vrindavan tamaki shri mayapur dhamaki ganga mayaki jamuna mayaki bhakti deviki Tulasi Deviki, Samaveta Bhakti Brindaki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the Samadavotis. All glories to the Samadavotis. All glories to the Samadavotis. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So page 10, continue with Nimesha 5b. A doubt regarding the transcendence of Bhagavat Sangha is dealt with by Jiva Goswami in Anucheda 134 of Bhakti Sandarbha. The doubt is, if Bhagavat Sangha is transcendental, it must be Nirguna. Yet the Lord seems to prefer to associate with the gunas embodied by the demigods. At the same time, he seems to disdain the gunas embodied by the asuras. Srila Jiva launches into this discussion by citing Bhagavatam 1.18.13. 10. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot be even compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter, and what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. 11. To be freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature is best. So therefore, association with a devotee who is free from the influence of the modes is the best kind of association with a devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11. King Parikit also asked the following question. My dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical to others? 12. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not give his real mercy to the demigods and others still under the spell of the three modes of material nature. He gives his real mercy only to the great souls such as Prahlad, who are freed from the spell of the modes. By associating with such devotees, one becomes free from the spell of the three modes of nature. When one is thus shaken off the influence of the modes, he can engage in real devotional service. This is described by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself in these words spoken to Uddhava, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.33. Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination in the modes of nature and engage themselves exclusively in loving service to me. 14. The assertion that knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is nirguna should be understood in the secondary sense of free from the influence of the three modes of material nature, and not in the primary sense of not having any qualities. The impersonal conception of God imagines that God has no qualities. This idea is nirguna in the primary sense. The personal and impersonal features of God are both nirguna, but it is the personal feature of God that is nirguna in the sense of being freed from the three modes of material nature. Indeed, the impersonal idea of God is a product of the material modes, mode of goodness, and the personal idea is free from the smell of the modes, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead itself explains in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.29. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. And happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But that happiness found within me is transcendental. It's also brought out in the second canto that
The impersonal idea of the Lord, this is actually materially based, along with also with the Paramatma realization. Because Godhead is personal. So to only to see him in impersonal or partial is not actually seeing Godhead. So it's still, it's influenced by the modes. Because in the spiritual, if you think about it, one may think, no, but it's transcendental, that would be spiritual. But if you think about it, in the spiritual world, anybody there who is, you know, a resident of the spiritual planets, would they in any way think of Krishna as the localized Paramatma or as the impersonal feature? Right? They wouldn't. They would think of him only in the status of Bhagavan. Therefore, this concept of Brahman and Paramatma is a concept of this material world. It's progressive steps, but it's not actually the standard. The standard is the Bhagavan understanding. Right? So, and then, so the point here is that we must distinguish between primary and secondary meanings. Right? Something is there, so the direct meaning generally is what is applied, but if that doesn't, then you take the indirect. Right? Does that make some sense? That's the point. So here it says he's nirguna, but we know that he has qualities, right? Nectar devotion gives 64 qualities. So that must mean that these qualities are not material. Right? The four Kumaras being on the Brahman platform are not attracted to anything material. How are they attracted to Godhead? Yeah. So it must be spiritual. Does this make sense? Very important, just principle of logic, that you have something, when you apply it, if it works, great. If it doesn't, look for other meanings, right? Every word has synonyms, right? So if the one doesn't make sense, start using the other meanings. Does that make, what the point is? So it must make sense. So there is standards. It does make sense. So we don't apply our own viewpoint on something artificially. Right? It's very common. If you think about it, probably most all disturbances with other living entities are all based on our taking some meaning that actually is not meant. Right? Does that make sense? Just a funny one. Someone was saying on the point when they were talking to the women that if you're making a point, the point can be taken in two ways, right? And one of the ways makes the woman angry, then the man meant the other one. Does that make sense? Right? So we always have to be very, very careful in this, because we see it's because of this, then we get misguided in spiritual life, because we take the wrong meaning. So same way also, just in our normal dealings with devotees and that, if we take it in the wrong way, then we have a problem. Right? So it's an important principle here. Right? All these things we have to see is, here's how it's applied specifically here. This is how it's used. The principle of it, the philosophy, that's there, and the principle of how its application must be seen. Does this make sense? Then we don't have problems. Right? So the main point is this, what's being made in this whole chapter, remember, is by hearing about the Lord and associating with devotees, one is free from all contamination and all fear. Right? One's elevated. So here, we see is, therefore, God only associates with those who are on that platform. So by hearing about that, therefore, we become free from it. If you hear about people who are not controlled by the modes, naturally, you're going to go step towards not being controlled. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So he clears this doubt, but we see it's not just, he clears the doubt that he's not just the argument of nirguna, saguna, right? He's completely taking in what is the working principle, right? The devotees are free from the modes of nature, and the Lord therefore only associates with them. Right? And so on that platform, they have the real mercy, they're performing the real devotional service. Right? Others are performing sadhana bhakti. Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions on that? Nimesha 5c. In Srimad Bhagavat Tatparya 3, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expounds upon the meaning of Nirguna in reference to the personal form of the Lord. Quote, the Supreme Lord is not a product of material goodness or passion. He is fully transcendental to the material modes of nature. Therefore, the Shastra has addressed him as Nirguna. Nirguna does not merely mean that he is beyond the three modes of material nature, for it indicates that he possesses unlimited spiritual qualities. The Supreme Lord is Adhoksaja, which means that his activities are not under the control of material time factor. The nature of Adhoksa is beyond the reach of direct perception, indirect perception, and immediate perception. So this also is an aspect, as we mentioned, the fourth platform of perception is Adhoksaja. So that's the Lord. He's beyond being perceived through the material senses and intelligence. Right? So in Adhoksaja, he is active within the material, which what we would call in the material sphere, right, as the universal form. So, but he has qualities. He's involved, but he's not, they're not his, the material is not his qualities. The material is the perversion of his qualities. Right? Point is, what's connected to Krishna is real. Krishna wants to taste, therefore the senses are manifest, and the sense objects are manifest, and then, therefore, the living entities can taste. But that's where it becomes perverted, because Krishna's tasting is connected to him. Right? No soul, the senses, sensual objects are all connected to him. Problem is we're trying to utilize them separately from him. So when we realize they're his, then we're not bound by it. Does this make sense? So that's that level of God consciousness is beyond all this. It's experienced, right? Like that. But it's active, right? The one below it, aprakrita. No, aprakrita is above it. Aparoksha. It's experienced, but as soon as you notice it, it disappears. But here, as you're conscious of Godhead, then you experience it. You understand? There's a difference. Doesn't make sense.
I'm not familiar with the aparoksha.
Oh, okay. Okay. Aparoksha means that that perception which you experience it, but you can't directly perceive it. Example is given when you're sleeping, right? In the morning, we can ask you, was it good sleep? And you can say yes or no, right? But if you're perceiving, hey, I'm sleeping, great, you're not asleep, right? But we can see here is God's not included necessarily. He can be, but he's not. But Adhoksija means you're conscious of God, and therefore you see his workings. So you're conscious of him, so it's not through the senses. Does that make sense? But you bring it down to pratyaksha, you can see it. Right? But that's not Adhoksija. It's based on Adhoksija. Nimesha 5D. In Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 112-113, Jiva Goswami makes clear that the phrase, quote, that transcendental happiness found within me, unquote, means from Bhagavatam 11.25.29, a verse he cited above in his explanation of the term Nirguna. Jiva Goswami draws a complete definition of transcendental happiness from Bhagavatam 1.18.13 and other verses in the first canto, Anucheda 12. The devotees dear to the Lord are described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13.
tulayama lavinapi. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. In this way, it is seen that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the object of love, Vishaya, and he is also the primary cause, Alambana, that makes the devotees fall in love with him. By following the path that begins with hearing about the Lord, the devotees attain love, Priti, for him. The word Vishaya may mean either the person who loves or the person who is loved. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:16:5-6. Tat kachetam mahabhaga yari krishna katatrayam atavasya parambhoja makarand is it? Can't read it there. That's an H or what? Liham satam. Please describe all these incidents if they are related to the topics of Lord Krishna. The devotees of the Lord are accustomed to licking up the honey available from the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? In other words, he says here, please describe all these incidents if they relate to the Lord. So not related, it's not interested. Right? Everything is ultimately related, but if you don't describe it related, then the effect is it's not related. You understand? Because that's the point. What we have to get used to is material energy is our concept, right? We think of Maya as something separate from Krishna. Maya is a devotee of Krishna, right? She's an expansion of Radharani. So she's always absorbed in the Lord's service. But what's happened is the senses and the sense objects that have been created, we think they're ours instead of Krishna's. So because of that, therefore, we fall into the mundane platform. Does it make sense? So if we see it and connect it to Krishna, it gives a spiritual result. So even though it's inferior, yes, there is a difference between material matter and spiritual matter in that one's superior, one's inferior. But the point is, this is all Krishna's energy. Therefore, Krishna can be manifest, and we can perceive Krishna in both. That makes sense? So when we see it in relation to Krishna, we get the spiritual benefit, even though it's inferior energy. But if we don't see it in relationship to Krishna, then we get the benefits of the Maya Shakti. We get taken, covered, and taken away from Krishna. Right? In other words, you see it connected to Krishna, you're uplifted and come closer to Krishna. You don't see a connection to Krishna, you're covered and taken farther away. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yoga Maya Mahamaya, do they, in that instance, change?
Is Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, they're the same person. It's just how they're dealing. The same person means the jivas that are favorable to the Lord, then Yoga Maya directs them. The living entities are not favorable to the Lord, she deals with them as, you know, as Mahamaya. Does that make sense? It's just like you have the judge in the court, and he's awarding, you know, how you say, benefits to one person and punishment to another. And over the same activity. Right? In the same activity, because of the problem, then the one gets the benefit and the other one gets punished. So it's the same person. So to the person that has gotten the favorable outcome, then they see the judge very favorably. And the one who got the unfavorable outcome then is not seeing very favorably. Does that make sense? But it's the same person. That's what probably gives the example of electricity can create heat and create cold. The same electricity runs the refrigerator, runs the heater. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing. It can do both. It's just how you apply it. That's what makes the difference. Right? Because we are on the mundane platform, we make this strong division.
right? But ultimately, what we're trying to do is convince ourselves that we're not God and this is not here for us to control and enjoy. Right? That's what we're trying to do. So many ways and so many doubts come up. So it has to be in all situations that... That's why it's so simple. The senses, Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Ruchite, the senses are engaged in the Lord's service. Because that's what we're doing wrong. Maya means we're engaging the senses not in the Lord's service. Krishna consciousness means we're engaging in the Lord's service. Because that's where else is interaction going to take place except through the senses. Right? So that's how you interact with other people. You see them, you talk to them, you shake their hand, you know, you pat them on the back, you feed them. You know, it's all through the senses. So that's the thing. When it's not done in connection to Krishna, it's Maya. When it's connected to Krishna, then it's transcendental. Does that make some sense? Yeah. But because we don't see the transcendental, then we focus on first making good bad. Good means, you know, it means it's Krishna conscious. Bad means it's not Krishna conscious, but we see it according to the form of it. You know, we're wearing devotional clothes or it's karmic clothes or it's you know, how you say, you know, cooked how we cooked it or it's not. Or it's, you know, we see it according to the religion rather than the transcendental platform. Does that make sense? Because in the spiritual world, they please Krishna's senses. He likes it done in this way that we would call Vedic. That's his preference. But that's why it's done. He likes it. You know, like Prabhupada's making the point. We're vegetarian because that's what Krishna likes. We're not vegetarian because vegetarian is the superior this and that and so many things. That viewpoint is true, but that's for the materialist. So at least the materialist within matter discerns that vegetarian is better than non-vegetarian. It's more uplifting. Right? But for us, we're vegetarian because Krishna's vegetarian. We only eat what he eats. Right? Does that make sense? So that makes it personal. That makes a relationship. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. That's why Prabhupada, if the devotees, he would always encourage the point, the vegetarian thing, because no meat eating is one of the points. But if the devotees get too distracted that vegetarian is their main thrust, then Prabhupada would point out, well, the pigeons are also vegetarian. So what? Right? So that's the point is, it's favorable as long as it's connected to the Lord. As soon as it's not connected to the Lord, it loses its favorableness. Right? On the mundane, it's pious, definitely it's uplifting, it's not degrading. But as far as getting back to Godhead, it's not going to take you anywhere. Right? Does that make sense? So vegetarian is important because we eat what's offered to Krishna. If you can't offer it to Krishna, why would you eat it? Right? That solves your problem with things like mushrooms. Right? They're vegetarian on one sense, but they can't be offered to Krishna. So then devotees take it, hey, it's veg, we can eat it. You can eat it. You know, you can eat all kinds of things. You know, you can eat shoes also. You know, some of them are vegetarian, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, but it's just, but the problem comes is you can't offer it to Krishna. So then why would you take it? Right? It means there's nothing sinful in that way by taking it. But why would you? Because it can't be offered. So if your point is vegetarian, then you'd look at it in one way. But if you're looking at it, we're vegetarian because it's offered to Krishna, you look at it in another way. Does that make some sense? You know what I'm saying? So there are these things that are right on the line. So that's because... And it's theirs because Krishna doesn't like it. He doesn't take them because he doesn't like them. Krishna doesn't eat mushrooms because he doesn't like them. He doesn't eat onions and garlic because he doesn't like them. Right? They're low class. Right? Does that make sense? So that they're in the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion. Therefore, he doesn't like them. He likes things in the mode of goodness. Right? Or we classify it as the mode of goodness. It's just what he likes. And then we classify it like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah, so that's the whole thing is we're trying to change our perceptive. We start off with learning facts and figures, but we're actually trying to change our vision. That's Shastra Chakshu. So we see through the eyes of Shastra. That's what these courses are meant to do. That's what Prabhupada's books are meant for. To change your perception. Right? Change the way you look at things. Right? So instead of just senses, sense objects, you know, or hearing from some else, then it's based on what you're supposed to do. It's based on because Krishna's involved in it. It's based on it's because it's for Krishna's pleasure. Right? So those last three perceptions are favorable. The first two are only useful if they're connected to the last three. Does that make sense? But just my senses, the sense objects, are other people's senses and sense objects, and therefore what they have to say because of what they perceived. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you see it yourself, and then you turn it into gossip, right? Or you hear the gossip from someone else. Right? So when you perceive it, that's pratyaksha. When it turns into the gossip, that's the paroksha. You hear from me what I've perceived, or I hear from you what you've perceived. So I'm not perceiving it myself, I'm hearing it through you. Right? So if those are connected to Krishna, great. If they're not, useless. Right? And even the rituals and those are useful if they're connected to a hoksaja, because the ritual is the form through which the Lord will appear. Right? The external form that we can see. Does that make sense? But it can also, as we can see, it can be not connected. Like the smartas are very expert, they don't connect it. So that's as far as they can get. They cannot get beyond that in perception. The impersonalists, this, that, they never go beyond. They never go to a hoksaja or aprakrita. They can never know the Lord in things and never know Him personally. Does that make sense?
Seems like these four different ways of perception have a lot to do with faith.
The levels of perception have to do with faith. Yeah, you could say that also.
And if the soul gets covered by illusion, so it goes in a reverse way, by losing things, like let's say.
The point is that if you have faith, you'll generally tend on these higher things and what's coming from the Shastra. You don't have faith, lose faith, you tend to go back to your senses. I see it, I believe it, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And what I've heard on the internet must be fact. Yeah. Okay, so,
by associating with the Supreme Lord, one falls in love with Him, is continuing Jiva Goswami, page 13. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the primary cause, alambana, of ecstatic love for Him. The secondary causes, udipana, of ecstatic love are different. The Lord's dear devotees are of two kinds, namely the devotees who have the same desire, savasana, and the devotees who have different desires, binavasana, are also objects, vishaya, of ecstatic love. The devotees are also the reservoirs of love, adhara, for the Lord. However, one's material friends and kinsmen are not the causes of attaining love for Krishna. Indeed, the devotees do not pray to attain love for their friends and kinsmen. Rather, they pray only to love the Supreme Lord. That they do not pray to attain love for their friends and kinsmen is seen in these words of Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.41. Ata vichvecha vichvatman vichvamurte svakeshume sneha pacham imam chindi dridham pandushu vrishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis.
So this means as kinsmen. As devotees, that's another thing, but as kinsmen. This is one of the things that you could say would be the difference in Vanaprast and in Grihastha, is that Grihastha, they are your kinsmen. That's why you've married them. That's why they're there. That's why the legal connections, all that, because they're kinsmen. It's on the bodily platform. Right? It's nothing to do with soul. You're not marrying souls, right? This concept of soulmates probably just laughed. Right? You know, it doesn't work like that. Soulmates are the living entity in God. Okay, that we could call soulmates, but other than that, no. But that's the body. So to appreciate them as devotees, and because you have a very favorable relationship with them as devotees and doing rendering service to them as devotees, that's actually the platform that the Grihastha is trying to get to. Right? In other words, the living entity should have no connection to the material world, and he should be connected to the devotees and the Lord in the spiritual world, right? So then he has that nice personal interaction. He doesn't have that, then he's going to look for it on the material platform, because the living entity must have association, must have interaction. Therefore, then, Grihastha life, right? So then in there, that way, then because of this attachment, you're willing to work very hard to maintain and develop these relationships. Otherwise, without the attachment, you wouldn't bother. Right? Because you're looking for your own needs rather than someone else's. But because that person is important to you to fulfill your need, therefore you work hard for them. Does that make sense? But with time, it has to be that now the natural thing is with time and association, you see that actually what I'm looking for in the way of needs doesn't work out, and these people don't fulfill them anyway. Right? So that is then the reason for moving in the direction of Vanaprastha and Sannyas. But if it's only the negative, then it will be very hard to maintain that platform. Right? Because the living entity still needs relationship. So as it's transferred that the family members are seen as devotees, and therefore it's associating with devotees is favorable, that's the platform, then it starts to work. Right? It takes on a different nature. This can be, of course, done within Grihastha life, but the tendency is not to. The tendency is towards the end it starts to, and it matures into this, which then would be called Vanaprastha. Right? Or a very mature platform of Grihastha Ashram. Because technically, Vanaprastha and Grihastha, you don't make much distinction if the husband and wife are together. Just one is actively involved in cultivating, one is not. Does this make some sense? Right? So, so it's the same way as that we're vegetarian because Krishna likes vegetarian food. Not that it's separately, right? So therefore, the inspiration, the relationship is the nice, favorable, devotional interaction. Right? That's what they're, rather than just the attachment. Right? Does that make sense? So we move in that direction. So it's the same kind of principle. Therefore, when Kunti is talking about here, that even though the Pandavas are and the Vrishnis are great devotees, but her attachment to them as a woman is because they're kinsmen. So, you know, from the woman's point of view, rather than from the point of view of the devotee. So it doesn't mean that she's not. She's going to go to the forest with, her brother-in-law and sister-in-law. Right? She's not going to go, I'm not this body, and just march out on her own. You know what I'm saying? She's going to go with them because that's the conditioned nature, is the feminine nature needs to be protected. But now it's going not because it's because they're kinsmen. Right? Does that make sense? This body works under these modes, so therefore it's best in this situation. Right? But that's not why I'm doing it. Right? Before, yes. Now, no. Now we're engaged in it because this is, you know, favorable for devotional service. Does that make sense? So externally, that's why it's confusing. Externally, it will still look possibly exactly the same. But the perception of it, the mood of it, has completely changed. Does that make sense? Your impetus is different. So here, therefore, then we're talking about the devotees, therefore, are also Vishai. It's from them we're also attracted and drawing this devotional energy, right? Because we've already gotten rid of Vishai in the material platform. You know, they're also Adhara, that they're holding that love appreciation for Krishna, right? Like that. Does that make some sense? Anucheta 13, 113. The love the devotees pray to attain is described in these words of Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam 1842. Toyi me nanya vishaya matir madhu pate sakrit ratim udvahatad adha gange vaugam udanvati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Right? So this is, it naturally flows. It's just, you don't have to force. There's nobody out there. You know, the department of government doesn't have a department. It's he's in charge of making the Ganga flow towards the ocean, right? You know, like that. Someone's there to have to force the water to flow downwards. No, it's not happening. Right? It's natural. So that's the kind of affection we want for Krishna. It's not inhibited by anything. It's not disturbed by anything. 18.3 continued. The sages complete their reply to Suta Goswami by saying the personality of Godhead is Prayanasya, the exclusive shelter for all great living beings. His transcendental attributes, Gunanam, Agunasya, cannot even be measured by such masters of mystic powers as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Can anyone who is expert in relishing nectar, rasavit, ever be fully satiated by hearing talks about him? You, Suta, are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord. As such, you are Bhagavat Pradhana. The personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. And so we beg to hear from you the pastimes of the Lord, for they are Vishuddham, above the material modes. We are anxious, Shushushatam, to receive such messages by which Maharaj Parikit, whose intelligence was fixed on liberation, attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of Garuda, the king of birds. Those topics were vibrated by the son of Vyas to Maharaj Parikit, and because they are about Ananta, the unlimited, they are purifying and supreme. They are Bhagavat Abhirama, most dear to the pure devotees, being Ati Adbhuta Yoga Nishtam, wonderfully full of Bhakti Yoga. Those are verses 14 through 17. It's interesting to note here, because we always, here's another one of those ones where it shifts, so then it has to be seen from a different viewpoint. Is we say you cannot become satisfied materially. No material amount of material engagement or quality of engagement will make us satisfied. We'll always be unsatisfied. We can only be satisfied in the Supreme, right? And so then we take that because we want to be satisfied. But as we get close, then these little ones pop out where it says that one can never be satisfied by hearing about the Lord or engaging in the service. So one may think, oh no, here's the same problem within the material world. No, this is in the positive, because it's not dealing with material. If you are not satisfied, we lose interest in the activity, and we therefore then give it up. But there, it's so nice and relishable, one can just keep absorbing oneself, just keep relishing it, right? Rasavit. Unlimitedly. So therefore, it's a positive, it's different. Right? It's not affected by ignorance that there's an end to it. Does that make sense? So that there it means you're perfectly happy, but you could do it for eternity. Right? So it's not bad. Not bad. Because here you like something very much, but then the problem is it gets old fast. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the principle. We see it here, one would wonder about it, but if the principle is that we see in the feminine nature, it's never stable, it's always changing, it's never the same. right? So, but the point of that is the ladies like to taste the rasa, right? And because tasting anything you like, you taste it for long enough, it gets old, right? Therefore, then when the man would just, he likes this, he just gets right down to business. The woman tries to stretch it out by distracting it into all kinds of things that are kind of connected, that are on the same path, but on the sides. Because then you keep that taste for longer, because they know more than anyone. It's like, you know, wow, this is great, I could eat this every day. It means I could eat this for the next 3 to 5 days. Right? And the man thinks, oh, we can eat this forever. Okay. Because you come back, the guy's still eating the same khichdi that he cooks in the same pot in the same way 20 years later. But that would have lasted 5 days. You know what I'm saying? Then it changes. So that's why they're trying to stretch it out. That's why it lasts 5 days, because they stretch it out. Otherwise, it would be gone quicker. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. In the material platform, it doesn't. But in the spiritual world, because everything's so perfect, then it just brings variety and adds to the eternal platform. So there it works. Srila Prabhupada remarks in 14th purport, now Bhagavat Saptahas are held for 7 days only, and after finishing the show, both the audience and the speaker become engaged in material activities as usual. They can do so because the speaker is not Bhagavat Pradhana and the audience is not Shushushatam, as explained above. Because they don't have that taste, they're not transcendental, and because the others are also are not looking, so therefore it's not gained. Everyone comes together, it's a religious experience, it's not actually transcendental. You know, religious at best. You know, like that. 18.3 continued. In response to this praise from the sages, Suta Goswami humbly says, I am born in a mixed caste. Simply by serving and following the great souls who are advanced in knowledge, I was promoted in birthright. All disqualifications resulting from a lower birth can immediately be cleansed away by merely conversing with such great personalities. After all, who is really worthy in this world of the holy name of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, other than the Lord himself? When Brahmaji welcomed Lord Shiva, he did so with water blessed by the touch of the lotus toenails of the Supreme Lord. This water, the Ganges, purifies everyone in the universe, including Isha, the name of Lord Shiva. O Rishis, birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows. I shall try to describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord as far as my realization permits. And born in a mixed caste means it's not pure. He's a Suta. Suta means the father is a Kshatriya, mother's a Brahmin, right? So this is considered mixed because it is the father is lower than the mother. So that's considered improper. Because that means the man will stay as he is. The woman has to drop her standards to actually work, make the relationship work. Therefore, it's considered second grade. The opposite, if the man was a Brahmin, woman was a Kshatriya, the child is called an Anantara. He's the same caste as the mother. Right? So they're not counted as different. They're mother Kshatriya, they're Kshatriyas. Like that. They'll have the Brahminical spirit, they'll be more kind of Sattvic, but they'll be Kshatriyas. They'll be Sattvic Kshatriyas. But they're not counted as a separate species of life. But if the father is Kshatriya and the mother is Brahmin, they're counted as another species. Right? Because of the mix. Does that make sense? So it's just... So that's why he's saying, I'm low-born, because I'm mixed caste. Even though it's basically... one, the highest mixed caste you can get. Of mixed caste, there's nothing higher than a Suta. Right? That's if they take advantage. Then we see Suta like this. Then they take care of the Brahminical. If they don't, then the next they generally take up the Kshatriya level, like we see. Otherwise, then they take up chariot driving. If they don't do that, then they busy themselves with snaring and catching animals. Right? Because a chariot driver is a mechanic. Right? Intelligent. Yeah, because a chariot driver means he's built the chariot. Doesn't mean he just drives it. He's a mechanic. He builds chariots. He drives them. Right? That makes sense? Okay. You were saying? Someone was saying?
Mixed caste, it's a new species because they have to make an adjustment.
Because you're running two mentalities at once. And so if you can adjust with both of them are there and work, accommodate them, it works nice. And there's no problem. They fit well into the society. Like here, Asuta fits in well. We see is Yayati's sons by not Samishta. No. Devayani. Technically they're suttas. As we see, they acted like them also. But if they just normal duty, they would just be taking as kshatriyas because that's how they'd be brought up, because that's what the father is, so the son takes on the qualities of father, like that. Fine. But we see that there was that aspect that wasn't. But in Sarmishtas, because she's a kshatriya, then her puru, he did the proper thing. So you had that kshatriya duty and all this and that. Right? Does that make sense? Ramaharshana Sutta is speaking the Puranas, who's taken up the Brahminical. Right? Son takes the qualities of the mother. But at the same time, as they had that kshatriya passion, yes, I'm the senior most here, and I'm this and that, and this is the rule and all that, and even though Balaram, the Supreme Personality of God, has walked in here, the Shastric rule, though unfortunately it has been written by Balaram himself, is that the person sitting on the Vyasasan doesn't have to stand up, so therefore I'm not standing up. But unfortunately, then Balaram didn't feel it was appropriate. Right? Because it was attitude. It wasn't that in the Leela he's so senior. Because Balaram is a younger person than Ramaharshana Sutra. He's there with the sages. Ramaharshana would naturally, stand up. And Balaram would have said, no, sit please. And Balaram would have sat on the ground there and heard from him like the sages are. Because Balaram's here for pastime. He's not here for being a god. Right? But since you got an attitude, then hey, we are God, and you are a sutta, so hey, check out this durva grass here, like that. So, does that make sense? So then immediately the sages themselves say, well, what to do? He's low-born, what to do? They do these things, dogs bark, birds fly, it happens. You know what I'm saying? But he was speaking and we were hearing, and so now it stopped, so now what? So then the son represents the father, so, because they had said the father, he'll live as long as he's speaking, so he will live through the son. So then Balaram also then adjusts for the sages. Right? He could say, no, I'm God, that's the way it is, sorry, no, but he adjusts things to accommodate, right? He maintains his and theirs. Another example we said before of two opposites, combining them, and that's the solution. All right? So here's another one. This is the third one. Right? I'm sure there's so many, but just as we're talking about it, then we notice that there's more than one. Right? Right? Yes?
If the parents are mixed varna, does that complicate things even further?
If the parents are mixed varna, then does it complicate it further? Yes. That's why when the devotees asked Prabhupada, so what varna are we? And Prabhupada said, mixes of mixes, right? Because in the Manu you have the varnas. Then you have varna shankara. And within that, then you have the mixes that can be trained as dvijas, right? Brahman, whichever is mentioned first is the male, okay? Just for ease, so we don't have to say it. Brahman, kshatriya, Brahman, vaishya. Right? They can still be trained as dvijas. Vaishya, kshatriya, vaishya, brahman. Kshatriya, brahman. Or kshatriya, vaishya. They can all be trained, these six can all be trained as dvijas if they take the qualities. It may be the mix throws them off enough that they don't take the qualities. Right? So those are there. Then the ones outside this, the ones that will be Shudras. So Brahman, Shudra, Vaishya Shudra, right? Kshatriya Shudra, all these ones like this. Anything that Shudras are mixed with will be Shudra. Right? Does that make some sense? Like that. Then it talks about what's outside that. Because those are natural Varna Shankara. Because it's clear what they are. Then you start mixing again. One mix is bad, but when you remix, it gets worse. Oh well, I put the disc jockey piece out of a job, but whatever it is, still remixing is bad. Svapacha is when you have a Brahman and a Shudra, that will give you a Nishada. Nishada then marries a Shudra, right? You get a Svapacha, because the Nishada is actually lower than a Shudra. So the boy will be lower than the girl. So it's gone this way and you've inverted it, right? The girl is Shudra and he's Nishada. So then that makes a Svapacha, right? The dog eaters. That's where their mentality comes from. Then if you extend that more, where that Nishada marries a Chandala, right? Chandala means the boy's a Brahmin. Boy's a Shudra, the girl's a Brahmin, right? The girl has to drop that much. That makes a Chandala mentality, right? So, does that make sense? So then, that is a problem. So when you mix those two, then you get, you know, like what's called Anantaras. They're outcasts even amongst the outcasts. Does this make sense? So, therefore, we fall in this kind of like last group of mixes. Like that. Still, you see some traits are prominent. So you work on the prominent traits and try to cultivate and bring them out. But you have to be able to look at it and accommodate what's there. Not looking at what's there is not progressive. Sutta Goswami's looking at it. I'm born in a low class, but by the association of devotees, and by hearing about that, therefore, I'm elevated. It doesn't matter because of that. Not because I'm, you know, special or because I'm this or that. No, it's because the devotees are special. Therefore, it doesn't matter. So, then I'm going to, as high as I can fly, that high I will, as far as my realization, that much I will discuss. Does that make sense? Then you're dealing on the real platform. You can actually know where your strengths and weaknesses are, and therefore bring them to advantage. Rather than with the false ego, no, I'm this, I'm that. Does that make sense? So you just take what's prominent and see how to best combine it to use it in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so then, no, it's 9 o'clock. So then we'll continue tomorrow on 8. Prabhupada's point here. Okay, well, we have to get to. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We have to get to 18. Okay, another 4 pages.